This hour of Overdrive is delivered by Skip the Dishes. Skip the Dishes delivers the food you want from the restaurants you love. Place your order using the Skip the Dishes app or online at skipthedishes.com. It's Mail It In Friday.
I just sort of space out for about an hour.
Yeah, it's Mail It In Friday.
I just stare at my desk, but it looks like I'm working.
So what?
I'd say in a given week, I probably only do about 15 minutes of real, actual work.
This is Overdrive on TSN 1050.
They don't call me the hardest working man in show business for nothing, Gord.
They actually don't call you that at all.
People call me that.
No one has ever called you that.
Someone's called me that.
No one. Who?
Somebody.
Name them.
Well, I'm establishing it this afternoon. So as of now going forward, they're going to start calling me that.
But someone has to have called you that.
Well, I'm telling you,
you can't nickname yourself.
Well, Mullen probably just did. Right, Mullins?
Oh,
You called me that before, right?
Big time.
Yeah, see, there you go. There's one guy.
You just bullied him into that. Like, you totally bully. Like,
that's not true.
You totally bullied him. What's he going to say? No, I'm not going to say that, Brian. You wouldn't be here on Monday.
You are famous
for your temper. You're famous for your tirades. You would have told, if he had not agreed to your little charade just then, you would have totally run him off.
Well, I have no idea what you're talking about.
Thank you, Mullins. Mullins has carte blanche. He can do whatever he wants.
Whatever you say, Mr. Hayes.
Well, right? Listen, I'm just telling you what I'm hearing in the grapevine. This is what people are calling me.
The word in the street is.
They're calling me the hardest working man in show business. And do you know why that's the case?
I have no idea why that's the case. I couldn't even begin to guess why that would possibly be the case.
Well, I was on earlier this afternoon. I was on from 11 to 1 up at the Mitch Marner.
So that's 2 hours.
2 hours.
Yeah.
And I had to drive in here.
Okay.
And now I'm going to do 3 hours.
So you're gonna work 5 hours today.
5 hours total on the air. Not including prep and transit.
All you guys at home, all you guys in your car, all you people in your cars, you know, who put in a good 8-hour day today, thank God you're not Brian Hayes, who had to work 5 whole hours today.
That's right.
Talking on the radio.
On 2 different sites.
On different locations. Thank goodness all of you who travel the highways and byways for a living, all of you who drive buses for a living, be thankful you weren't Brian Hayes, who had to talk on the radio, then drive his car.
That's right.
And then talk on the radio
for
again.
5 hours.
For 5 whole hours.
Well, I said the hardest working man in show business. I didn't say in any other profession. And let's be honest, in the media world, 5 hours is crazy. Crazy. That just doesn't generally happen. Right? I mean, on average, how long does a hockey game take you to call?
Would you like to talk about the World Junior?
How many games a day do you call the World Junior?
2, usually.
So I would say on average it's about, 2.5 hours? Yeah. Let's say so you're doing 5 hours total a day.
I've never complained or called myself the hardest working. I didn't
call myself that.
People are saying this. Let's be honest. No one is saying this. This is like the question reporter says. You know, people say that maybe you've lost your fastball. Who says that?
Well, I'm saying that, but I'm using other people to do that. I guess maybe you're getting to the root of what I'm trying to get across here.
I have no idea what you're trying to get across.
I'm trying to get across that I'm the hardest working man in show business. That is one thing I will take from Trump. Trump has perfected the people are saying.
Yeah, because everyone says.
Everyone's saying, yeah. People are saying. If he says that, he believes he has carte blanche to say anything after that.
Yeah.
And honestly, I think that can be a bit dangerous at times, but it can also work for you. You know, people are saying I should be doing this.
I just want to establish now that you are now cribbing from the Donald Trump playbook.
Yes.
So you have basically nicknamed yourself, bullied an employee, a fellow employee, into agreeing with your charade, and are now taking from the Donald Trump playbook. Do I have it correct? Like, producer Joe is back in this. Is Joe back in the chair?
Yeah, Joe's back.
So Joe produces Leafs Lunch, right?
Well, we call him Al on Overdrive.
Yeah, small P producer, right? So I have not seen producer Joe since before the World Cup soccer. And now, again, he's in charge of the chair, and the thing's out of control.
Mm-hmm.
You have basically steamrolled through the control booth.
Well, yeah, that was probably inevitable. It was going to happen today. I'm in one of those moods.
Are you?
Yeah, I've got a lot of takes.
You've been working hard.
I'm overworked.
You've been working very hard.
I'm running on fumes.
Would you like a nap?
Yeah, well, maybe. I mean, I knew this was coming. Chris texting and saying, hey, shut up. I work 12 hours a day on a regular basis. I don't need to hear you complaining. All right, Chris. I will no longer complain.
I'm going to guess Chris is not calling you the hardest working man in show business.
Well, potentially.
He's not part of the everyone who was allegedly saying this about
you. Well, it's out there, man.
The thing is, that's the same as you can't say with all due respect. and then say whatever you want afterwards.
Mm-hmm. Or with that being said,
yeah,
that's my favorite.
Yeah.
You know, I really love it here. But with that being said,
I hate it here.
I hate it here with a passion.
He's a good guy, but I hate his guts.
Yeah,
because he's a lying weasel.
Exactly.
Yeah. He's like, a good guy, though.
It opens the door up to contradiction and basically for you to say whatever you want.
Say whatever you like, yeah.
But it was cool to be up at the Sports Village up in Vaughan. It's a really cool spot. And Mitch Marner, he should be proud of himself. He put on a really good event. Like, everything went off well. And
he's looking pretty chiseled this summer, huh?
I saw him
a couple weeks ago.
I saw a clip that he said he wants to be taken more seriously now. And I don't think that's why he did this event. You know, he's a Toronto guy. But he does, of all the kids, quote-unquote, he has this vibe to him of being kind of the little brother on the team.
Right.
Right? Which is kind of natural. He's a smaller guy. He seems to be having fun when he's on the ice all the time.
But, looks young.
Yeah, he's the same age as Matthews. Matthews has a persona of him like he's a 30-year-old veteran.
Matthews can grow a beard.
He's attempting to do that. I don't know if that's going to hold up come training camp.
It looks beardish.
Yeah, it was. Oh, yeah. He was from me to you. We interviewed him this afternoon. And he's got it going. Like, he's got everything working. And he said what I think Leaf fans wanted to hear. He said, I plan on being a Leaf for a long time. We all know the contract talks are underway because he said that last night. Told Glenn Sheeler last night.
Yeah.
They've been talking. Just a matter of working it out. But are you still bracing yourself to hear that news between now and opening night in October? Or do you think...
I do think they'll sign him before training camp starts. I don't think it'll be October. I don't think it'll be opening night. I think before training camp, his deal will be done. It does itself. It's 8 years. It's $11 million. It's done.
Yeah, those guys, generally speaking, that's how it works out.
Right. He's a star. Don't fight with your star. And then,
considering that this has taken a little bit longer, does it make you look back on the McDavid signing any differently? Because that was like July 1st at noon.
Yeah. No, I don't think so. I don't know that they're in a rush. I mean, I wouldn't read too much into... I mean, the Leafs had other stuff to do this summer, obviously, and they've got Nylander to get done. That's probably more of a, you know, a more urgent thing that they've got to get finished. No, I wouldn't worry about it. I'd be shocked if we didn't see by Labor Day weekend that Matthews had signed an extension.
Yeah.
It's 8 years and it's in the $11 million range.
Yeah, that sounds about right. I think that's what we're all waiting for. And then you lock him in, you know, he's here.
So the question for the Leafs is, can you get Nylander and Marner done for under 13.5? Could you get the two of them done for a number around 13.5?
Not on long-term deals, I don't think.
Probably not.
Yeah.
You're probably bridging Nylander, right? Like, you're doing a two-year deal with Nylander where he makes 4.5 in the first year, makes 6.5 in the second year, so it averages out to 5.5. Now, if you believe, you know, the word that, you know, Darren Dreger talked about this last spring, that you know, the Marner camp is pretty firm that they're not going to take much less than Matthews makes. That's a different deal.
He's just in a different spot because of the position he plays in. I think that is what kind of takes him.
What if he leads the team in scoring again next year? What if he's the leading?
I think there's a real chance that will happen.
Yeah, right. So, I mean, so if you go to them and say, look, it depends how much value you put in points, right? So to a lot of people in the game, points are an archaic way of measuring a player's performance. You know, second assists, all that kind of, you know, they are a bit of an archaic way of measuring things. But it's still, you know, I mean, the Art Ross Trophy still goes to the NHL point leader. And you talk about who led the team in points. I'm more of a goals guy. For me, it's more about goals. But, you know, Marner's going to have a compelling case based on the fact that points are still part of the conversation. And if he leads the team in points for a second straight year, he'll make the case. He doesn't have arb rights, but I mean, if you went to an arbitrator, that would be a pretty compelling case.
Yeah, it would be. I've always envisioned, since Tavares came aboard and we found out what the number was going to be, $11 million a year, I picture Dubas and company having a number in mind that they want to get Matthews, Tavares, Marner, Nylander, Kadri under.
Right.
And that number for me is $40 million combined. So let's say Matthews and Tavares are both at $11 million. That's $22 million. Kadri's at $4.5 million. That's $26.5
million. Yeah.
There's your 13.5.
There's 13.5. So $40
million. For Marner and
Nylander. So the cap went up quite a bit this year because of the Vegas effect. Right? So you're not going to see the Vegas effect likely again. I mean, Vegas isn't going to have revenues increase that much. You've got a couple of issues that are going to drag the numbers down a bit this year, which is that, you know, Montreal is not anticipating a big year. Chicago is coming off a non-playoff year. Those are two major drivers of attendance money, of attendance revenue. So say the cap goes to $85 million, okay, for the 2019-2020 season. Say the cap is $85 million, and you've got those guys at 40. That leaves you $45 million for the other 18 guys in your team. Now, you stack in, look at it this way. If Matthews signs for $11 million a year, you'll have 10 players at $56 million, not counting Nathan Horton. So Horton's on long-term injury, and he can put you over the cap by a certain amount. But that's 10 players at $56 million. Say you get Nylander and Marner done for 13. Okay, so now you're at 12 players at $69 million. You've only got three defensemen and one goaltender under contract beyond this season. So you need 11 more players for basically $16 million. And that's not, you know, so I mean, that's, is that enough for a significant upgrade on D? Is it enough for that? So that was the question, and I know people in Toronto got upset with me for bringing it up, but it's something that a lot of hockey people have talked about outside Toronto is, how do you make it all fit? Now the answer
it's going to be difficult to do.
Now the answer is you've got lots of flexibility to make trades. We had Kyle Dubas on. We spoke with Kyle Dubas, and Kyle's thing was he believes their defense is better than people give it credit for. So if you believe that, and you don't think the defense needs a major upgrade, then you can probably get it done. But historically, when you've had a couple of players making more than $20 million, it's been difficult. It's hard in Chicago. The Blackhawks have had a real hard time fitting everyone around Kane and Taves, right? The great luxury that Pittsburgh has is that their superstars, who are two of the best players in the game, both make less than $10 million.
Yeah, they signed so long ago that the cap just keeps going up.
Right, and so...
happen here, too.
And to be honest, one of them, Crosby, took substantially below market.
Based on superstition, if you believe that, whatever it is. But $8.7 million.
But he also wanted to win.
Yeah, and that's, you know, you could argue that that happened with Tavares. Like, by all accounts, he was offered upwards of $13 million somewhere else.
And if you believe the reports that buzz around, the Oilers offered Connor McDavid a lot more than he took.
Right.
He came in at $12.5 million. He probably gave them back a million. I mean, McDavid's worth whatever he can get. But he wants to be on a competitive team. Now, real open question in Edmonton. Can they be competitive with their salary structured the way they are?
Well, I think you can be, for sure. It just puts such an emphasis on you filling out the rest of the roster.
Right.
You know, and I mean, the same kind of pressure is going to be on Dubas and company here in Toronto. Because let's assume going forward, those five forwards up front that we mentioned, Matthews, Tavares, Kadri, Marner, Nylander, that's the core up front
right.
going forward for the next 5 years, give or take. That means you've got to get other guys that you've developed and can play on the cheap on entry-level contracts or that you've signed to quality deals that continue to exceed the value. Maybe Connor Brown is that guy at $2 million or Hyman at $2.1 million. I'll even throw two more guys in here on Toronto, which will push the magic number up to $50 million total. Morgan Rielly at $5 million.
Yeah.
Freddie Anderson at $5
million.
So you've got the five forwards, your number one defenseman, your number one goalie. That's $50 million. The rest of your roster's got to come in at $30 million left, whatever's left, $30 million, $32, $34. Going forward, it will continue to go up and up and up. But that is the reality of a hard cap system.
Right.
Is you commit to seven or eight guys, if you're lucky, and hopefully they're the right seven or eight guys, because this is when you really get in trouble. And Edmonton's an example of this. One of their seven or eight guys is Milan Lucic, making way too much money. And that's not going to cut it. It's not going to work. Right. So
the only defensemen you have under contract after this season are Rielly, Zaitsev, and Dermott.
Well, and you could include Zaitsev because he's in long-term, right? Like, they're obviously committed to him. Now, you could probably flip him if you wanted to.
Now you're down to two defensemen.
Right. That's what I'm saying. I'm talking about, like, who's included in this whole core. Zaitsev, based on the signing, would be included in that core.
So that's the question that managers around the league and cap guys around the league are asking is, how do you make it all fit? And I mean, the Leafs obviously knew what they were doing. This doesn't catch them by surprise. They can read a spreadsheet like anyone else. The question becomes, how do you do the gymnastics? And now you can make trades, for sure. You know, you have young assets that you can move to make room.
I think it's drafting and developing.
It is.
That's what it is.
But the problem is, Brian, the guy you draft in the summer of 2019 is likely not an impact player for you for 3 to 4 years.
No, that's right. But what I'm saying is then the guy you drafted in 2015
right.
better be ready to play.
Right.
And that's where Grundstrom's going to come in more than likely this year. Dermott came in last year. Hopefully next year for them, Liljegren is ready to play. Right? Like that. That's where you're going here. And Rasmus Sandin in 2 years is ready to step in. You got to hit.
You'd hope that Cali Rose and
you have to hit on those guys. Because you're going to have 7 or 8 guys on your team that are cheap. Your backup goalie is going to make $1 million every year going forward. That's it. That's all you can give. And your 5 and 6 defensemen are going to make under $1 million. And your fourth line's all going to make under $1 million. Like there's 8 guys right there that are all going to make under $1 million.
So the when Pittsburgh beat Detroit for the Stanley Cup in 2009, a Penguins executive said to me, and it doesn't mean it this way, but what he said was, our crappy players were better than their crappy players.
Right.
But he doesn't mean they're crappy players. He means the lower half of their roster.
Which is just being realistic.
Which was better than the bottom half of Detroit's roster. I go to games all the time and talk to pro scouts. And they will sit down with the rosters before the game and just start crossing guys off. Because, you know, they'll say, I can't scout anyone who makes more than $1.2 million. We're not in the market for any player who makes more than $1.2 million. So he's got the salary chart out, and he's looking for the best $900,000 players he can find. So if you don't have the cap space, you know, like the one thing Washington, it was funny how it worked for Washington because they had to retool, and it actually played into their favor because they had to play a bunch of guys that they had drafted. They had to play Tom Wilson up in the lineup. Whether he was ready or not, Tom Wilson had to go up in the lineup. They had no choice.
Mm-hmm.
They'd lost Johansson. They'd lost Williams, right? They'd lost Justin Williams. They'd lost, who else left the team? I'm trying to remember.
They made that deal with New Jersey for
Marcus Johansson. Marcus Johansson. So they'd lost significant pieces from their team.
Right.
And they had no cap space. And so at the end of the day, all of a sudden, lower roster, like you take a chance on Devontae Smith-Pelly.
Pays for you.
You take a chance on Brett Connolly, who's a guy who's bounced around, you know, was a former, you know, top 10 pick in the league.
Right.
He's bouncing. You throw a third round pick at Chicago for Kempney to be a depth defenseman, and he winds up being in your top four. You know, like that's now they also have, don't forget, Matt Niskanen and John Carlson on defense, who are two elite defensemen. Right? I mean, Carlson and Niskanen are both excellent defensemen.
And a great center ice with Backstrom
terrific,
on the
terrific
cheap
center ice, and a real Kuznetsov, and a real good goaltender, Braden Holtby.
Yeah.
But, you know, but even then, you know, Washington, we keep reminding people, you know, down 2-0, lost 2 games at home in overtime. You know, in game 3, in overtime, Columbus hits the goalpost. If that goes in, the series is over.
Without question. Like, for you to win 16 games in the spring, it can't be 5 or 6 guys that are going to do it for you all the time.
So where do you find the guys? You know, if you look at Pittsburgh over the years, what Pittsburgh has done so well is fill the bottom of the roster. Jake Guentzel, Zach Aston-Reese. Brian Rust. They're able to fill up the bottom of their roster with guys they either drafted or signed as college free agents and plugged them into the lineup. They have 2 of the greatest centermen of their generation playing in the 1 and 2 spots. And I would argue that Toronto, and I've made this point before, over the last 2 years, only Crosby and Malkin have more goals than Matthews and Kadri. They're already stacked down the middle. The question is, can you build around that? And that's the challenge.
Right? That is, especially without the cups. I mean, that's also the biggest difference between what Pittsburgh and Chicago are dealing with and what Toronto is dealing with.
Well, Chicago won 3 Stanley Cups with Kane and Taves making $6 million each.
Right, but even now that you're dealing with missing the playoffs and having problems, if you're a fan there, you got to be like, I got 3 cups, man. This was Toronto.
No, you're right.
I mean, you'll take 1 cup and then a disaster for the next 5 years because of cap problems because they finally actually won something.
Chicago's paying the price for its success, no question about it.
And so did L.A., and Pittsburgh's probably going to have to pay at some point if they didn't in between cups in a way.
Yeah.
Although that was largely injury-riddled.
Now, we talked about this last week, the Marian Hossa deal to Arizona and how that smells. I think the same thing with the Brooks Orpik deal to Colorado.
The cap circumvention of that?
So basically, what happened was Washington traded Philip Grubauer, their backup goalie, along with Brooks Orpik, to Colorado for a second-round pick and a prospect, but the prospect's just a body. They get a contract off the books for Colorado. But essentially, then Colorado agrees to buy out Orpik. So basically, Colorado purchased Philip Grubauer by buying out the cash on Orpik. They're paying for Grubauer because Washington couldn't buy out Orpik. They're so tight against the cap they couldn't buy him out. Now Orpik comes back to Washington on a 1-year deal
for $1 million.
So Orpik is basically made whole, almost made whole, because he gets 2/3 of his deal previously and another million. So he's close to even,
and he gets to stay where he
and
wanted
he's back
to stay
in Washington.
Anywhere.
I think if you trade a player, he should not be able to be back in your lineup for a calendar year, because this stinks. Like this, don't you think? Like this.
Yeah, no, it's a circumvention without question. I mean, I don't think anyone in Toronto can complain because of what happened when Lou was here with Lupul and Robidoux and all that kind of stuff. I think when the league let the Leafs get away with all that, they can't stop anybody else. Like, I'm with you. It doesn't feel right, but if you're Washington, you're being like, oh, really? You're going to check in on us?
Oh, yeah.
Let's go check in on Robidoux and Lupul.
And there's a couple other teams that have pulled this stunt.
A lot of different teams.
Like, let's talk about Arizona piling up Chris Pronger, Marian Hossa, Pavel Datsyuk.
And I think the league is probably like, you know what? It's a hard cap. It's tough for a lot of the high-end teams. We're going to let them get away with something. Because they're the teams that have really been screwed by the cap, is the teams that have the money to spend well beyond it, and they don't have that ability. So,
have I mentioned I hate the salary cap?
I'm not a fan either.
So you have I mentioned that to you?
I don't think I've heard your particular rant. I think it should be softened, or there should be something where you can find some more movement.
If you re-sign your own player.
More flexibility.
I think only 2/3 of his contract should count, or declare one player that you can only count two. And if he leaves, his full contract counts for the next team.
Sure,
But Chicago was such a good team and had to unload all those good players. You know, they didn't want to trade Dustin Byfuglien.
Go back to the first Cup. They didn't want to trade those guys.
They lost six guys off their first Stanley. Like when they raised their first Stanley Cup banner, there almost weren't enough guys that had been there the year before to hold the banner.
Right. Yeah. No. I'm with you. There's got to be a better answer, but they're never going to change it. They love it. They love as everything I've heard, the league loves it.
From everyone, that's what everyone's saying. The same people that say that you are the hardest working man in show business.
Well, there are a lot of people out there saying that, and it's picking up steam on Twitter. A lot of people agree with me.
Really?
Well, not me. Agree with what other people are saying. I would never say that about myself.
I think you did.
No, I didn't. I don't believe I did. I said people are saying what I'm hearing.
I think you actually tried. There's an NHL player who tried to nickname himself.
Yeah.
It didn't go well.
It's the worst idea you can ever have.
What was your nickname when you played in Barrie?
Just Hazy.
Hazy.
Or
Hazer. Hazy.
Plug.
You.
Guy on the bench.
You.
Who are you? What's your name again? I always like that one. What's your name again? That's a great nickname. Yeah. Very affectionate. Ross Atkins will join us, the GM of the Blue Jays, in about 10 minutes on the Hap deal yesterday. What else could happen between now and the end of the month or even into August? So we'll catch up with Ross Atkins. Johnny Manziel did not get on the field last night. A lot of people in Montreal disappointed
and
about
you,
that.
And I know you were just because you...
I was watching last night. I was tuned in, and I was disappointed that he didn't play. But I could
hear your voice as I found out. I was flying back from Calgary last night, and then I landed and heard that he hadn't played. Mm. I could hear your voice in my head screaming, "What are you people doing? You have
Montreal, Edmonton, and I am locked in, I didn't get what I was looking for.
You got me, and you didn't give me what I came for."
I'm going to surprise you and tell you why I actually think this is a good sign. All right? I'll explain that to you, break it down next. People are saying that Ross Atkins will join us in about 5 minutes.
Is that what everyone's saying? Is that a word in the street? Everyone's saying that?
People are saying.
Everyone's saying. That is an absolutely... On the list of useless expressions, everyone says, the one I can't stand from reporters, only time will tell.
Mm-hmm.
Well, of course time will. I mean...
Yeah.
Like what else would happen? Like,
only time will tell.
Only time will tell. Will this happen? Only time will tell.
Only time will tell if Ross Atkins will actually call in.
I'm going to say he will.
He's generally very on time and prompt, and he's been good to us, so we'll catch up with Ross, and we'll see what he says about the Hap deal yesterday. Johnny Manziel was in attendance in Montreal last night.
He looked good in uniform.
Looked very good in uniform. They were selling jerseys and everything.
Crazy. People were going nuts.
They were chanting for him to play.
Yeah.
And Mike Sherman, it was cringeworthy. John Liu interviewed him going back onto the field in the second half.
Yeah.
And John asked him about Manziel. And he danced around even saying his name as if it was going to be like a tampering fine or something.
You know what's weird? I know you want to say that everyone's the same, and I know and the coach is probably sick and tired of talking Johnny Manziel. He's got a game to prepare for. He knows Manziel's not going to play much, if at all, so he's tired of the questions. But it was like he was talking about his ex-wife. You know how guys, like, they won't mention their ex-wives' names?
Yes. Like, it's like a Voldemort or something.
Yeah, like, what are you doing?
I can't say his name. It's the quarterback that shall not be named. And everyone's waiting for him to play. But here's why I kind of appreciate that move from Sherman last night.
Okay.
Is if Manziel's not ready to play, you shouldn't play him. Because it's not a rodeo clown here that you've acquired.
Yeah, no.
You want him to perform for you.
Well, just think for a second. To your point, Mike, or Brian, just think Mike Sherman puts him in, and he gets clobbered from the blind side and injured some way.
Exactly. Mean,
you look like the biggest...
That's a fireable offense.
Yeah, like you look like the biggest jackass going, right?
Absolutely. So as much as I wanted to see him, yeah. I'm watching the second half of a blowout, and I'm sitting there like, I want to see if he's going to come out. But I can understand and I can appreciate it, especially if I'm Manziel. For having a coach that's going to protect me.
And you know what, Brian? This is a little bit like what happens in hockey, right? When a team gets a high draft pick, fans want to see that player right away, right? An 18-year-old, they want him in the lineup right now. There's a select few players are ready to play in the NHL at 18. Very few. And most get set back playing too soon. But fans and management wants the guy in, right? Because you've got a lot, presumably in hockey you suffered to get the guy. You finished low down in the standings. So you want to give fans reason to be optimistic. We got this shiny new toy. Like Pavel Zadina will be interesting in Detroit because the Red Wings generally don't keep 18-year-olds in their lineup. For the most part, they have not. You know, Halifax is hosting the Memorial Cup this year. They got a real good, look like they have a real good team. If you send Zadina back, he's going to play on a good junior team, play late in the playoffs. But at the same time, you're trying to sell tickets in Detroit,
mm-hmm.
right?
And you can sell that he dropped to you at 6. Wasn't
right.
a reach. People thought he'd go maybe second overall
right.
or third overall.
So here you are. So the business side is saying, the shiny new building is wearing off. People have had a year of that. We need to sell people something. Let's keep this guy. And that's the conflict you get into all the time. And so what management has to say to the coach is, if you think he can help us, if you want him, guarantee me he'll play 15 minutes a night.
Here's another thing I'll say about Manziel. Last night I saw some people tweeting out like, oh man, TSN must be so disappointed they were hyping this up. TSN's so happy because they can hype up the next game.
I was going to say.
This is when he makes his debut.
This is the gift that keeps on giving, right?
Absolutely. Don't worry about Rod and the boys on TSN. I guess it was Kate last night on the panel. But
yeah, I just think there's going to be so much expectation on him.
Absolutely.
He's seen 3 months of the league. He's run practices.
He hasn't taken a pro snap in 2 years.
Exactly. Even more to the point. Never mind the whole CFL thing. He's not played in a live game, like a real game, in 2 years.
Right. I'm looking forward to it, though. It's going to be a fun ride.
I think in a year from now, if he sticks it out, in a year from now, he could be the next great CFL quarterback. Now, I don't know how long he'll stay here, because if he starts to light it up, the NFL is so desperate for quarterbacks. If he's put the thing back on the rails and shows that he can do it, he's back in the NFL.
I think someone will give him a chance, as long as they also believe that he's got all the other stuff figured out, too.
Right.
Which we believe he's getting to the bottom of, but you got to do it more than like 6 months, right? You got to go a couple of years, maybe, of proving that you've matured and all that kind of stuff is behind you. But really, it begins on the field. If you can do it on the field, you can get away with so much more.
That's the whole thing, right? I mean, ultimately, what matters is if he gets it done, right? And that's baseball, that's every sport. I mean, you can look past some of the other stuff and worry about that later. It comes down to whether or not the guy can help you win or not. And in the NFL especially, if you can help a team win, you'll get 18 second chances.
It was an active day yesterday for the Blue Jays. Jay Happ off to the Yankees for a couple of players. And there's potential for other moves between now and the end of the month with the Blue Jays. We'll catch up with their GM Ross Atkins in 2 minutes. Overdrive continues, TSN 1050 and on the TSN app. Brian Hayes, Gord Miller in here. Jays in the south side of Chicago tonight taking on the White Sox. Marcus Stroman on the mound. And this will be the first time they'll be on the road without Jay Happ in the clubhouse
yeah.
in a couple of years as he is off to New York.
They kind of missed it in Chicago on that stadium, didn't they?
Where it is, you mean?
Well, no, just it opened in like in what 89? No, 98, I think maybe.
It's relatively new.
Like it was around Camden Yards.
Yes,
just before Camden Yards. So Camden Yards, the Jake in Cleveland, all those opened just after the new Comiskey, if you want to call it that.
Mm-hmm.
And they just built a very cookie cutter, you know.
Well, you got Wrigley that you're competing with too. That's the problem in Chicago.
Right.
You can't possibly compete.
But they opened a new ballpark with it, you know.
Well, they won a World Series there.
They did.
Here's the GM of the Blue Jays, Ross Atkins. How you doing, Ross?
Good. How are you guys? How's it going, Brian?
We're doing pretty well. You traveling? You in Chicago or staying in Toronto?
Nah, we got our group together here in Toronto around the clock and staying plugged in. So it would be, you're traveling right now would certainly make us less efficient. So we're plugging away, trying to make the organization better every day.
Well, what's that like if somehow you lose a signal or you don't have access to your phone? Like, what kind of panic does that set off this time of year?
You know, it actually is one of the very few challenges of being an international team and being in Canada. We do probably have that hiccup from time to time. It's so minimal, but that's not a good feeling when you have a missed call or the voicemail pops up from out of nowhere. So definitely not a good feeling. It's not something that you have to be available to make sure that you're not missing out on any opportunities. And sometimes, you know, you would think that, you know, there would be time and no one would move without maybe double and triple checking. But, it's definitely an important time to be available. That's for sure.
Ross, when you looked at how long did this deal take to come together? I mean, the Yankees have been talked about for a few weeks. Hap had a couple of wobbly starts in between, you know, 3 weeks ago and now. How did this deal come together?
This one took almost a month. And it was, you know, early on teams targeted Jay as one of the better, I think, because of how he was performing, the character, having been in the playoffs before, in the market, who the competition was in and around Jay, teams were talking about him early, and New York was certainly one of them. So, you know, the discussions were not quite as frequent early on and as they were in the last week. They were daily and then became hourly. And, really our thought process on it was to just get the best understanding of what opportunities would be out there. And I think as we got closer to the deadline, there's always the feeling, or you're always thinking, okay, could there be a little bit better? And it's interesting, as it's human nature, you know, to wait for deadlines to really do or demonstrate and show what your quote unquote best bolt is going to be. And the way that things progressed, and because we spent so much time on it, we felt like we were getting near what that best bolt might be from any of the other teams. So cash was great to deal with, and really, really transparent, very, very communicative, available, thoughtful. And he's also, Brian Cashman, the New York Yankees GM, who I'm referring to, he's also just, he's a lot of fun. He's gotten to the point in his career where he's really kind of where every sports executive wants to be, where you have a ton of autonomy, all the resources you could possibly need, tons of depth in his system. He's very well respected and highly regarded. And it's really cool to see someone that has reached that level of excellence and is still extremely humble.
We're chatting with the Ross Atkins, GM of the Blue Jays. So you got Drury and McKinney in return, and you mentioned just how stacked the Yankees are, and that seems to be the case with Drury, who was a guy who came over from Arizona previous couple of years, put up some pretty good numbers, ran into a strange migraine issue earlier in the year, and kids just blew by him. And these are really high-quality kids with the Yankees, and he couldn't find a spot. So take us through your thought process in terms of Brandon Drury, because he's not a young guy necessarily. I believe he'll be 26 in a few weeks. I mean, relatively speaking, he is, but it's not like he's a 20-year-old in Double A or anything like that. Was he the guy you really have been targeting for a month, and if so, why?
No, I mean, there are times you go into certain, you do target players for sure. We weren't targeting Brandon Drury in the industry. Was he important to us with New York Yankees? Of course. We ended up with him. But But I think ultimately one of the reasons that we have two very good players, if you look at some of the other rental returns, the Cole Hamels one, the other returns you're seeing in the game, the Familia return, you know, there's a lot of risk, not more in quantity and depth, not near as much certainty, and nor the upside. So we feel great about our return, and I think it's, you know, sometimes not as easy to digest because it may feel a bit redundant and from the position side. But ultimately, to acquire a major league potential everyday player, and two of them, we see both players as potential everyday players for someone on an expiring contract is really unusual. That, you know, that may happen in the case of the elite talents, Manny Machado, Chapman, where, you know, you are just going to give up absolutely what it takes to get that level of talent. That's not taking anything away from Jay, but Jay's never been at that caliber of performance that those guys are. So, you know, if you just step away from it objectively and think about the return, we were very pleased with the level of return. And the positional fit is something that we'll take that challenge any day, all day long.
Well, and that's what I wanted to get to as well. You mentioned kind of the redundancy of the position with Drury being an infielder, a guy who plays predominantly first or third. He's played some second base. I know he can play some outfield, but his numbers have not been spectacular out there. You know, you guys, what you have in the system, what you have here right now in Gurriel Jr. and Travis and Diaz and Solarte, those are all guys who are going to play the infield. Smoke is still on term, and we all know about the two big kids who are coming up, and we expect them to be infielders in Bichette and Vladdy. I mean, how do you find time for these guys, not only over the final 50-plus games this year, but if they're going to be pieces over the next two or three, how does everyone get hacks? How does everyone get in there?
Well, I would say a couple of things. Like, one thing is, if you look at the winning teams and winning organizations, they have that challenge, exactly what you're describing. They have very good players that would be everyday players in other teams that aren't getting everyday at-bats, and they have everyday major league players that are in AAA. So, you know, we're not there yet. We're not a championship team, obviously. We are becoming a championship organization by building depth, and we will get there. Now, the second thing I would say is that all of these pieces, as long as you're agile and you have the ability to get deals done and you understand the industry, and meaning know the talent that is out there and available to you, you know, players are in their currency. They're, you know, so if you are doing a deal, and it, whether it comes in the form of Canadian dollars or U.S. dollars, you're going to be able to figure that out, just like any businessman can do, and make the most out of that talent level. And I think, because it is interesting, you know, we oftentimes do the exercise ourselves where you start to build out diamonds for 2019, 2020, 2021. And I've been working in this game a long time, and we've always done that for fun. It is a fun exercise. But in my experience and our experience, it never looks the same as you build them out. You look back from those diamonds you drew, and we have databases that do it for us now, and it will evolve because of other acquisitions, because of trades, because of injuries, because of health, because of performance, and it is all about having the best possible depth.
Talking with Blue Jays GM Ross Atkins. Ross, I'm curious about Cole Hamels. You mentioned that trade with Chicago yesterday. How much were you keeping an eye on Texas and Hamels as you were trying to get the Hap deal done?
Yeah, I mean, of course, we pay attention to it. We try not to ask questions that we don't want to be asked ourselves. You know, that, you know, who else are you interested in? And there are tactics that other executives will use to distract or potentially devalue assets, and, you know, we're not salesmen, Lizzie. We're looking to execute as many very good deals as possible, and feel that transparency and integrity is extremely important in doing that. And over the long haul, we're going to end up being able to do better or just solid baseball deals if we maintain that approach.
With Hap obviously moving on, but his deal was up at the end of the year. I believe the same thing applies with Estrada, Garcia. He may have an option for you guys. But as of now, in terms of guys that you expected to be a part of your 1 through 5, it's Stroman and Sanchez who have, you know, obviously contracts that would lead to team control for quite some time. But beyond that, I mean, going into 2019, you just mentioned penciling in your diamonds going forward. It would appear to me like you guys got to find at least a couple of starters going forward. Now, maybe Baraki's a guy, and I'd be curious to get your take on how you feel about him. But I mean, that could potentially be some pretty heavy lifting this upcoming offseason. I mean, is that going to be a focal point for you guys filling out the rest of your rotation going forward?
Yeah, I think so. I think now it doesn't mean we won't acquire more position player talent. If it is clear that we are getting the best return by acquiring another shortstop, we will do that. But if it's, you know, now if it's close, not just splitting ties but just close, we're going to definitely be focused on tipping and trying to acquire as much of it as possible. And extremely excited about Sean Reed Foley, extremely excited about TJ Zoik, excited obviously Ryan Baraki, and you know, guys like Sam Gavilio, you can't possibly have enough of those. That's been really a great story for us this year to have acquired in essentially a waiver claim price. And that, you know, that the if you look at number four, number five starters, even for championship organizations and teams, they're guys that throw the ball over the plate and can get outs and maybe aren't striking out as many players. But your question's a good one, your point's a good one, and we're in line with that. We are going to be focused on acquiring good young pitching.
So, you know, the deadline's still got 4 days to go. The big names that have been talked about for most of the month, Ross, are gone. I mean, Machado's gone, Happ, Hamels. Do you expect it to be busy between now and the end of the deadline? And do you think you'll be busy?
Yes, I think we will be. I know we are. My phone just beeped in from another executive. I hung up and called you from another executive.
Well, we appreciate that. Yeah.
Who was it, Ross? No, please, tell us.
Just tell us.
No, we will. I mean, we have some other guys on expiring contracts. We have players that teams would love to have. So I would expect that a lot more deals occur.
But and only players on expiring contracts? Or what about guys that are under term, guys that have term?
Are you going to trade Vladdy between now and the end of the month, or what, Ross?
No, I think it's unlikely that we trade guys that we control for a significant time. You know, it's just, it could occur. We're not focused on that. You know, I think when it's pretty easy to flush out just how genuine interest is. Once you start to talk, you can real quickly understand. We know the depth of every system. We know the names that are in certain tiers. So we can ask, you know, 2 to 5 questions and know in a hurry if we need to do the work on trading one of our controllable players.
Well, we'll let you get back at it. And we appreciate you finding some time for us, as you always do. We'll do it again down the road. Thank you, Ross.
All right, Brian and Gord. Have a great night.
There's Ross Atkins, GM of the Jays. Phone blowing up.
You know what? To be honest, if you look at the return that Texas got for Hamels,
not very underwhelming, wasn't it? For a guy who's been a monster in the past.
So the Jays did okay here. I mean, I know people say it's underwhelming. Happ hadn't been overwhelming in his last 3 starts. I mean,
I think it's because of the Yankees. That's a big part of it.
You just think you're going to open the vault and take 2 of their best prospects.
Exactly. And why are you helping the Yankees?
And
you
know, like that. But the Yankees aren't doing that anymore.
No, Cashman, look what he's built. Like, you just heard Ross Atkins pumping his tires. I don't think I've ever heard an executive talk about another executive the way that Atkins just talked about Brian Cashman.
Do you remember how Brian Cashman was mocked when he started with the Yankees?
Early on, even a couple of years ago, remember, he was in a weird position, kind of a power struggle, it felt like. And him and Joe Girardi were going at it. And a lot of people were siding with Girardi. And obviously, they picked the right guy. I mean, with all due respect to Girardi, Cashman's done a spectacular job. We'll recap our conversation from earlier this afternoon with Austin Matthews, with Morgan Riley.
Nice.
Yes. And Josie Altidore is coming up just after 6.
Because you were busy today. You have been the hardest working man in show business.
Well, people are saying that. I appreciate you saying that. There you go. There's another guy saying it. Mullen and Gord are willing to say that.
Lies. Oh, he lies.
Lion Brian Hayes with Gord Miller. Overdrive continues on the TSN app. All right, Gord Miller's in here, Brian Hayes. This is Overdrive on TSN 1050 and on the TSN app. We're going to revisit our conversation earlier this afternoon at the Mitch Marner All-Star Invitational. with Austin Matthews. Maybe we'll just replay the whole interview.
Sure.
Mail it in on a Friday.
It is mail it in Friday. You have not.
That's what they say.
You're not mailing it in today. You're grinding it out. Although
I appreciate you.
A buddy of mine
that.
Just called me. He's listening, and he said, "Actually, Tom Cruise is the hardest working man in show business. He does his own stunts."
See, I've got a theory on that. I'm going to tell you about it kick off the 5 p.m. hour.
I don't want to know.
I've got a theory.
I don't want to hear this.
A well-thought theory on that.
I doubt it is.
I'm telling you. Hour two up next. Overdrive continues. TSN 1050.
You've been listening to Overdrive, delivered by Skip the Dishes. Skip the Dishes delivers the food you want from the restaurants you love. Place your order using the Skip the Dishes app or online at skipthedishes.com.